The town clerk informs me that we have a quorum, and I hereby call this meeting to order. My name is Kate Blake, and it is my honor to serve as your moderator for the second night of this 2023 annual town meeting. Before we get started, a couple of preliminary matters. First, a reminder that there is reserved seating in the front to my left, your right, for anyone who needs to sit closer to the monitors for closed captioning. In addition, you can follow along with closed captioning on your mobile device. You'll need to log into the school's Wi-Fi, which is LS After Dark. There's no password for this Wi-Fi. Once you have an internet connection, please visit sudbury.ma.us/townmeeting/captions. Please also ensure that your cell phones are on silent, and I will also note that try and use your cell phones as minimally as possible because that does interfere with the wireless systems that we're using for voting tonight. Second, everyone must be in a seat. We cannot have anyone standing in the aisles or at their seat unless they've been called upon to speak. Fire exits are at the rear of the auditorium where you entered, as well as in front through the stage. I will not repeat what I said at the opening of town meeting about procedural matters, but if you need a refresher or if this is your first meeting, I urge you to consult with the first section of the warrant. This section provides a thorough summary of basic town meeting procedures. A big thank you to Girl Scout Troop 62503, who are selling refreshments in the lobby with proceeds to support the troops. Thank you also to the scouts who are assisting with microphones tonight. We have from BSA Troop 65, Violet Veland, Jenna Yazdani, Sudbury Girl Scout Junior Dylan Alterio, Sudbury Girl Scout Cadets Taylor Gardner and Taylor Alterio. A quick reminder about debate. If you wish to be heard, please hold up your card and wait to be recognized. Once you have the microphone, please begin by slowly and clearly stating your name and address. There is no need to turn on or off the microphone. All questions and comments should be addressed to me, and I will decide how to direct the questions. In the interest of allowing a full but efficient discussion of a broad range of topics, I ask that you not reiterate any points that have already been made or ask questions that have already been answered. I also ask that everyone be respectful of each other and the opinions that are being voiced. I will not permit any clapping, booing, hissing, or other audible noises. If you are a recently elected or appointed official, please see town clerk to be sworn in at the end of this meeting. Finally, a reminder about the electronic voting this year. Voting at town meeting will be conducted using an electronic voting system purchased by the town of Sudbury as authorized by town meeting in May 2022. You should have received a wireless remote clicker to cast your vote. When it is time to vote on an article, I will declare that voting is open. To respond, press the button that matches your answer. For yes, press 1A. For no, press 2B. The clicker will then display 1 or 2 and OK. If you see OK, that means your vote has been received. I will give a few second notice before I close the vote. When I make that announcement, if you have not seen OK, please let me know, and I will keep the vote open longer. You'll also note a very tiny T and R, which means that it's transmitting and receiving, so you should see all of those things to make sure your clickers are working. There is no need to press send, as your vote will be submitted automatically. If you want to change your vote, or if you press the wrong button, simply press the correct button. Only your last vote will count. Once I announce that voting is closed, the system will calculate the vote and I will announce it, and when voting is closed, your screen will go blank. The results will then be shared on the screen for everyone to see. If you need to leave the auditorium for any reason, including at the end of the night, you must give your device to the clerk staff outside of the auditorium. This includes a visit to the restroom. You can only vote with your own clicker. If your clicker does not show anything on the screen, please stand up and a member of the staff will come over to help you. We'll conduct a test vote now to get everyone comfortable with the voting procedures. And the question is, will the Celtics win the NBA championship? Yes or no? And voting is open. Okay, has everybody seen okay and their vote on their clicker? Anybody having issues with their clicker? Okay, in the back. Okay, so it looks like everybody has cast their vote. They see okay. So we'll close that vote, and you'll see that one actually passed, unlike the Red Sox last night. Okay, so we will move on to Article 23, Purchase of Fire Engine. Motion by Select Board.
Move to appropriate the sum of $1,020,000 for the purchase or acquisition of one fire engine slash pumper and associated equipment, including any incidental or related expenses, said sum to be raised by taxation in accordance with General Law Chapter 59, Section 21C, I and a half.
Is there a second? There is. Presentation by Fire Chief Whalen.
Thank you, Madam Moderator. Good evening. My name is John Whalen. I am the Fire Chief for the Town of Sudbury. It's my pleasure tonight to present Article 23 to you. Currently, our Avenger 1 is a 2005 emergency one pumper. It has 127,000 miles on it. This piece of apparatus has been in frontline service at Station 2 for about 11 years. Then it was replaced and then brought to Station 1, where it's been in frontline service for the last 6 years. Typical service life on a piece of apparatus like this is 10 years on the front line and 10 years in secondary service. The new engine that we're looking to replace is a new engine pumper. It's a 1,500-gallon-a-minute pump, 1,000-gallon water tank, and we'll also include a new set of auto extrication tools. These tools are run on batteries nowadays, which is awesome because we don't have the constraints of having cables and wires and all that sort of stuff. And we replaced a set on engine 3 when that truck was purchased in 21, and it's made our lives a lot easier. One of the biggest issues that we have in the town, as you well know, is we have very narrow streets, and this truck and the last one that we built are designed to be shorter and shorter. That gives us maneuverability within the town, especially up in North Sudbury where it's a little tight. As with everything else in the world today, because of our climate, the build time on a new piece of apparatus is in between 24 to 36 months. The lead time to get this piece of equipment is really based on the equipment that goes on the trucks and on the manufacturers of all three manufacturers that I've had discussions with and got bids from. They are all reporting the same time frame for delivery on a piece of equipment like this. What my fear is that we'll lose one of our pumpers and we won't be able to replace it in a quick and orderly fashion. That's why I came to you in this fiscal year to replace this truck. Does anybody have any questions?
We'll do the questions after we finish the reports from committees. Select Board for report?
Select Board supports unanimously.
Finance Committee report?
The Finance Committee recommends approval by a vote of 7-0.
And CIAC for report?
The CIAC recommends approval of this purchase, especially in light of the fact it takes so long for delivery on this truck. So we appreciate that, Chief, you bring this to us early. Thank you.
Does anybody wish to be heard on this article? I think there was a question over here. If you could bring the microphone over to the gentleman right in front of you, thank you.
Six Orchard Drive.
Could you just repeat your name? It didn't.
Richard Weiner.
Thank you.
My question is, the vehicle will last approximately 20 years. How much fuel will be consumed in that 20 years?
Are you able to answer that question?
Madam Margaret, I can tell you what our fuel costs are on a monthly basis, but that would kind of obscure the numbers for you because of the cost of fuel. Has risen so much in the last 3 or 4 months. We spend an average of about $3,000 to $4,000 a month on diesel fuel.
The reason for my question is, rather than pour $3,000 or $4,000 a month into fuel, how about going electric, even if it means doubling the cost?
That is a possibility. I had a conversation with one of my colleagues. They were out at the big FDIC show last week, and electric fire engines are running anywhere in between $2 and $2.5 million. These vehicles are pretty new to the fire service. I haven't heard of any issues, but the service life at this point is unknown, so it would be kind of an unknown for me personally.
Other comments? Yes, straight in the back, please. One of the scouts, please.
I'm Marie Rock, 26 Whispering Pine. I'm wondering, Chief, if you can tell us where these trucks or fire engines are manufactured, and if you foresee any difficulties with getting parts, let's say, from abroad in the supply chain. Thank you.
Chief Whelan?
So that's a very good question. The manufacturer that we've been buying our fire wrappers from for the last probably 6 or 7 years is headquartered down in Neskohoning, Pennsylvania. And unfortunately, in the last year, they've closed that plant and they've moved their operation down to Alabama. As far as the availability of parts, we're always waiting for new parts, replacement parts to come in. Some things are readily available. I'll just give you a great example. We needed a new fuel tank for an engine this week, and we were able to get it in 3 days. But there might be a warning light that's on the back of the truck. We might not be able to get it for 6 months.
Yep. In the back as well, please.
Maura Carty, 15 Stonebrook. I'm just wondering, is there a value to the truck that we're retiring?
Chief Whelan?
So there are values in these trucks, and what happens is this piece of equipment that we're retiring is going from frontline service to really reserve service. And the 1997 truck that we have will probably be put out for auction or out to bid.
A follow-up question?
Thank you for that. And what would be the value of the 1997 auction? And does that come back to the town? Or just curious. Thanks.
So I'll give you an idea on that. We had a 2008 emergency one pumper that we had to dispose of because of all the electronical issues with that. And we put that out on Municibid, which is a bid site. And I believe we got $13,000 for that truck. And that goes back to the general fund.
Anyone else on this article? Okay, I don't see any. So the quantum of vote required for passage of Article 23 is majority. Please note that this is different than what is printed in the warrant. And just 1 second. Okay, voting is now open. More seconds and then we'll close the vote. Okay, voting is closed. That passes by well more than majority. Yep, Can you please pack a microphone?
Just, this is a tax override, so is there a reason why it's not two-thirds?
There's no borrowing. It's not being borrowed. Moving on to Article 24, Americans with Disabilities Act, Transition Plan Recommendation, motion by Select Board.
Move in the words of the article, with the sum of $200,000 to be transferred from free cash.
Is there a second? There is. Presentation by Sandra Duran, Combined Facilities Director.
Thank you, Madam Moderator. Sandra Duran, Combined Facilities Director. It's my pleasure to stand before you and ask for your support for additional funding for our efforts towards complying with the Americans with Disabilities Act. As many of you may recall, back in 2021, as part of our ongoing effort, we contracted with an outside vendor to perform a self-evaluation and create a transition plan. We've been working on that steadily since that time. The accessibility survey included all the spaces where the town offers programs, services, and activities to members of the public. We had looked at 5 public schools, 14 public buildings, which included the police station, the 3 fire stations, our library, our 2 DPW facilities, and 2 of our historic buildings, as well as the transfer station, and our 11 recreation facilities. As of the end of April, in terms of the barriers that we've removed, we have removed from the municipal areas, we've removed 88 out of 441 noted barriers. From the schools, we've eliminated 78 out of 672 barriers. And in the parks, we haven't started yet. But I will say that thank you very much for the pathways with the CPC, because that will enable us to really move and work with the Park and Recreations Department on creating accessible pathways. Spent to date, we spent approximately $61,000 out of the previous $200,000. So when we think about what is it that we're planning to do with this additional money, and we have yet $139,000 left, roughly, well, some of the priority one items, such as water fountains or pathways, are quite expensive. So as an example, we had applied to the MOD for funding, and we were not provided funding this year. It was a pretty competitive grant process. However, just putting in the water fountains within the schools and the towns that were noted that were needed, that cost alone with labor and materials is estimated at $149,000. When we look at all of our fields and our schools, this additional funding would go towards making accessible pathways and dealing with our continued priority one items. Those priority one items include door hardwares, egresses, changes in elevations. For example, in the Flynn building, we have a lot of transaction counters that are very high. So for anyone who is someone who is sitting and trying to do a transaction, we've not made yet accommodations for those individuals. Those are some of the examples that we plan to use this additional $200,000 for. That combined with the previously approved CPC money, we believe will put us really in great stead to be able to just continue to include it in our ongoing maintenance and capital improvements. Thank you for your consideration, and I'm hoping you'll support it.
Thank you. Select Board for report.
Select Board supports unanimously.
Finance Committee for report.
The Finance Committee recommends approval by a vote of 7-0.
CIAC for report.
CIAC recommends approval of this by a vote of 6-0. We recognize that all these ADA projects are important, and inclusivity is an important thing that we're taking care of, and appreciate the work of the director, facilities director, on this.
And Commission on Disability for a report. You can bring a microphone over into the middle here, please.
Pat Brown, Commission on Disability. The Commission on Disability unanimously supports this article.
Does anybody wish to be heard on Article 24? Okay, in the back center, please, if you could pass the microphone over.
Greg Hamill, 16 Plain Street. I'm totally in favor of this. I just had a question for perhaps the FinCom. What's happening to our free cash? How much will be left over at the end of the day if we expend all these free cash things? And is the FinCom satisfied or comfortable with that number at the end of this meeting?
Can you repeat your name for our record?
Greg Hamill, 16 Plain Street.
Thank you. Is FinCom able to answer that question?
Madam Moderator, we did consider the total amount of free cash in our decisions on these articles. We are comfortable with the amount of spending. I can't answer the precise question of the amount left, but maybe Mr. Cohane could help with that.
Town Manager Sheehan.
If all of the articles are approved this evening that are proposed to be spent from free cash, we'll have about $275,000 left.
Anybody else on Article 24? Okay, we'll move to voting. Voting on Article 24 is now open. Few more seconds on voting. Voting is closed, and I neglected to announce that this is a majority requirement, and that passes now with more than majority. Article 25, DPW roofing project funding, motion by Select Board.
Move in the words of the article with the sum of $400,000 to be transferred from free cash.
Is there a second? There is. Presentation by Sandra Duran.
Thank you again, Madam Moderator. Sandra Duran, Combined Facilities Director. With Article 25, we are asking for you to approve $400,000 for the purposes of installing a new roof on the DPW building. This is in support of a solar project. The solar project requires that a new roof be put on DPW and have a warranty of 25 years. The roof at DPW is nearing its end of life. The size of the roof itself, here's a photo of it. The existing roof's general description is we have one steep slope roof, that's about 10,500 square feet, and one low sloped roof. That's about 815, and then we have a metal roof of 17,525 square feet. The roof was originally constructed in 2003. This project will materially extend the useful life of the building and will provide the implementation of solar panel installation, as I mentioned before, will be both a money and an energy savings project. Project itself, because we have such a large roof, will make more than enough solar for the use of the DPW building and will be able to offset our costs on other buildings. Solar array, yes. The system size, the solar system size that we'll be putting on was currently at a 287.5 kilowatt size. The system will generate 319,693 kilowatt hours in year one. In subsequent years, it will decrease because solar systems, for those of you who might have had some over years, they will decrease a little bit over time. That is pretty much it, unless people have specific questions about the solar array.
Thank you. Select Board for report.
Select Board supports unanimously.
Finance Committee for report.
Finance Committee recommends approval by a vote of 7-0.
CIAC for a report.
CIAC recommends approval of this by a vote of 6-0.
Does anybody wish to be heard on Article 25? Yep, if you could bring a microphone over there, please.
Thank you. Elaine Barnard Goldstein, 40 Indian Ridge Road. Madam Moderator, can anybody tell us at what point will the solar panels be installed and when will they start work?
Ms. Duran?
Hi, yes, I certainly can. Right now we are working we're negotiating a contract with a roof designer. There's a roof designer that's required by the building code to have an engineer in control of the project because it's so large. So we are currently doing that. The roof designer will take, 4 to 6 weeks to create their design. We'll go out to bid because it's a large enough project that we need to do that. And the idea is that we'll be in construction this summer with the solar panels going on late summer. It's going to roll right in should you all approve it. And one thing I did neglect to say, and I'll just take this one extra moment, is that you might know that you can finance solar panels through the solar company, but doing that doesn't really make long-term sense. And so if we were to finance it through the solar company, if this article were not to pass, we would pay like 20 cents, 21 cents a kilowatt hour. But with this, we'll be paying approximately 7 cents, 7.5 cents a kilowatt hour. So it makes long-term sense. Plus, it will decrease our energy for our other buildings. Our energy use.
Other comments or questions about this article? I don't see any, so we will move to voting. The quantum of vote required for passage of Article 25 is majority. Voting is now open. Few more seconds. Voting is now closed. Article 25 passes by well more than majority. Article 26, DPW building office renovation, motion by Select Board.
Move in the words of the article with a sum of $125,000 to be transferred from free cash.
Is there a second? There is. Presentation by Ms. Duran.
Thank you again, Madam Moderator. Sandra Duran, Combined Facility Director. With this Article 26, I'm asking for your support and funding to create additional office space within the DPW building. The slide you see before you, there is a outlined area that shows the area that would be impacted. It's within, it's the conference room that's in the DPW building, close to the Board of Health, Facilities, Building, and the Conservation Commission. In this slide, what you see is a conceptual plan of using the existing area and reallocating the total space to create four offices, a conference room with a 34-person capacity. A blow-up of that is seen here. The office spaces that will be created would be one for our land management person and our Conservation Commission, who will be coming hopefully soon. An office for the facility sustainability coordinator that would be carved out within that space down below. And then also two offices for our social workers. This plan uses the current space and tries to be in the most efficient manner possible. So essentially we're not moving many of the walls. We're building around the existing space.
In terms of timeline, if you were to approve this, we would move forward to construction documents and be ready to roll out with RFP and implementation immediately. We do have our social workers who don't have an office. They're using conference spaces in various locations, and we also don't have space for our sustainability coordinator or our incoming land use person without this particular plan or plan B, which we'll work on should you not support this. But thank you.
Thank you. Select Board for report.
Select Board supports unanimously.
Finance Committee for report.
The Finance Committee recommends approval by a vote of 6-1.
CIAC for report.
The CIAC recommends approval by a vote of 6-0. This article addresses the need for the reconfiguration of this space and accommodates the new hires and for the Conservation Commission and the Facilities Department. The CIAC explored whether this project should wait until the overall space study is completed, but Director Duran told us that there was an immediate need for this space given the sensitive conversations that are conducted in these departments, and the CIAC agrees and thinks that this should move forward. Thank you.
Any comments or questions on Article 26? Okay. In the back, please.
Siobhan Hollinger, 55 Washington Drive. I don't doubt that there's a need. My issue is that Article 27 seems to be the practical approach before expending dollars on any type of space, particularly since it includes town and school properties and it without relevance to occupancy. So there may be actually other ways that the space can be configured within the DPW building, but without knowing that and having this study done that's under Article 27, we may actually be creating a problem in addition to the problem we already have.
Ms. Duran?
Thank you for that. And actually, we thought a lot about it. All the committees, we discussed it pretty thoroughly. And the programming studies that I've been involved in as both a participant and those that I would have directed in my career, oftentimes you would go to the directors of the program and the town managers, the people who are trying to make sure you have synergies, and you would ask them, well, who do you work best with? Who do you need to cohabitate with? And part of that I did with my colleagues. We performed our own sort of mini programming study there. And if we were to hire an architect that was just looking at programming, different than the architect that we hired to actually look at the DPW space for any other ideas besides this one, which, by the way, this was one of four options that we came to. We did have other options that we entertained and by committee and discussion came down to this one. I would give them that feedback, and I think my colleagues would as well. Based on my conversations, the Board of Health feels as though they need to be very close to the Conservation Commission. Conservation Commission feels that they need to be very close to the Board of Health and to DPW. Us and facilities need to be close to all of them. Now with sustainability, we are all getting very coordinated and close. And so we would feed that to that entity, and they may likely come back with this. Let's look at the plan of where you are now and how we could adapt that space. So that's why we are going forth with this, because we actually do have people here and coming who do not have office space.
Other discussion on this article? I see none. The quantum of vote required for passage of Article 26 is majority. Voting is now open. Few more seconds. Voting is now closed on Article 26, which passes by well more than majority. Article 27, Space Use and Facility Condition Study. Motion by Select Board.
Moving. Number two. Hello, 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 hello.
There we go.
Move in the words of the article with the sum of $300,000 to be transferred from free cash.
Is there a second? There is. Presentation by Combined Facilities Director Duran.
Thank you. Thank you. I believe this will be my last time at the bat. Article 27, Space Use and Facility Condition Study, and thank you in the rear. I'm sorry I missed your name for introducing it in that way. Just as it says, space use and facility condition. About every 10 years is about the industry standard to do this, and we've had a number of studies over the years that were right in line for that. With the pandemic that happened, our world has changed and how we work has changed. We would like to undertake a facility condition assessment on all of our buildings that would include the school buildings as well as the town buildings. Envelope studies, mechanical, electrical, and plumbing studies. We'd also take the studies that have already been done, particularly those in recent years, and update them. We would not be starting from scratch. The funds that we're requesting are $300,000 for that. We do have some supporting budgetary proposals from architects and other vendors to do this work, and we believe that we'll be able to accomplish gaining the data that we need to put in a capital plan, as has been requested and as is our charge, and to ensure that we are using our funds appropriately and we're able to forecast our capital needs. As I mentioned, it's both for the town buildings and the school buildings. Thank you.
Thank you. Select Board for a report.
Select Board supports unanimously.
Finance Committee for a report.
Finance Committee recommends approval by a vote of 5-2.
CIAC for a report.
CIAC recommends approval by a vote of 5-1.
Any questions or comments on this article? Yes, right in the front, please.
Hello. Steve Garvin, 26 Bowditch Road. I'm speaking for the Planning Board and the Master Plan Implementation Committee. In this last year, this was the number one priority coming out of the Master Plan of action items we met with the Select Board about. So we support this and believe it's the right next step for the town to understand the study and condition of all the public buildings.
Other comments or questions? I don't see any. The quantum of vote required for passage of Article 27 is majority. Voting on Article 27 is now open. A few more seconds. Voting on Article 27 is closed. That passed well more than a majority. Article 28 is withdrawn. Article 29 is withdrawn. Article 30, amend general bylaws, Section 1, Chapter 33, Solar Energy Revolving Fund, motion by Select Board.
Move in the words of the article.
Is there a second? There is. Presentation by Energy and Sustainability Committee.
Rami Alwan, 119 Pantry Road. I'm the chair of the Energy and Sustainability Committee. When the solar array on the Route 20 transfer station was built by the town needed a mechanism to purchase power generated and receive funds from power sold to the grid, hence the Solar Revolving Fund. This fund had a very narrow scope. At this time, it can only be used for the transfer station project. The fund has covered the town's needs until now. With the DPW roof solar project moving forward and hopefully the Fairbanks Roof Solar Project moving forward, if you vote on it on the next article, as well. The town will need a mechanism to purchase and receive receipts from these projects as well. Now, the town could create an individual separate revolving fund for each of these projects and then an additional revolving fund for every new project that goes in the future. It makes far more sense to just consolidate all of this into one fund to administer current and future town energy and sustainability projects. The Energy and Sustainability Committee asks that you vote to expand the scope of the existing revolving fund to meet the current and future needs of our town. We can expect the Energy and Sustainability Committee to be coming forward to you with more projects in the future. Thank you.
Thank you. Select Board for report.
Select Board supports unanimously.
Finance Committee for report.
The Finance Committee recommends approval by a vote of 8-0.
Does anybody wish to be heard on Article 30? Okay, right in the back, Ms. Nam.
Jean Nam, 81 Newbridge Road. I just have a question. And I hope these solar panels do happen, they are on, for example, school buildings. The school budget is separate from the town budget. So will there be some sort of allocation algorithm for deciding which funds will go to the school, which will go to the town, or which will go to wherever, or is it just one big pot? Thanks.
I'm not sure who might be best.
I can speak to you
okay.
slightly.
Okay, sure, if you'd like to.
So the way in which solar power is sold to the grid and used has changed over the past 15 years since I've been involved in these projects. Currently, what would happen would be any power generated would go into the general fund for the town, and then the different meters would be paid for out of the fund. So effectively, the power could go to a meter used by the school, and then the school would pay for that energy, but would do it at a decreased rate, because the dollars that we get, the cost from solar power is far less than the cost from Eversource in the grid. Does that answer your question? Perhaps not.
So could you simplify it for me? The power that comes from the sun to the build to the roof of Nixon Elementary School is going to go to, the savings will go to SPS, or the savings could go anywhere?
I think Ms. Duran has a comment on that.
Go ahead.
Pinch hitting. We have our solar revolving fund. All of our energy, our electrical bills get out of that solar revolving fund. So would it go back to the schools? Yes, in the sense that we're paying a lower rate, and their bills would be a lower rate. So those savings would be noticed by their budget. Does that make sense?
Okay, so does it work that electricity, because electricity is paid separately by the different departments, right?
It all comes out of our energy fund, our solar energy fund. Am I correct? Schools? No. Oh, the schools.
The schools have a line item called...
Oh, I'm sorry. So, I'm sorry. I don't pay
utilities.
Those bills. I don't pay those bills. So, I'm sorry.
So it would... The savings would go to the schools as a function of lower energy costs. There isn't any profit to be made, because the energy that's produced, the only way you can make money on it is the energy that could be produced by the solar panels. If it was sold to the grid and then the grid paid us for it, then that would create money. That's no longer allowed. That used to be allowed 10, 12 years ago. That isn't how the system works anymore. So if you may know it from that time. That is actually how the current revolving fund makes money. The array at the landfill sells power, buys power at 10 cents and sells it at between 18 and 20 cents, depending on the prevailing rate. And that delta is money that comes back to the town for future energy projects. That isn't the way it will be moving forward. So what's going to end up on the DPW roof, that will produce more energy than the DPW needs. So that extra could be used to defray costs at, say, the Flynn building or at Town Hall, some other meter that the town uses. That would also be true for buildings that would be school buildings. They would produce energy, and then that energy would be produced at a cheaper cost, so the school department would realize the savings in a less, in their line item would have to pay less out of that line item.
Okay, I appreciate that. So what I'm hearing is that there is
Last question, please.
Right. So I'm just clarifying. There is no algorithm. We're not really sure. We think there will be a general savings. And so I foresee a problem going forward in that everyone's paying for their own utilities, but it's not clear who's getting the savings or whether the savings is equally distributed. I think that just needs to be clarified so that there are future...
That's not true. That's not true. So currently, when we complete the DPW project, instead of paying 10, 15, 16 cents per kilowatt, the DPW will be paying 7 cents per kilowatt, and they will have a lower energy cost. If that array were rather on Nixon School, just for example, the same would be true. Instead of buying power off the grid at 10, 12, 15, 16 cents, whatever it is, instead they would be getting it from the solar array on their building at 7 cents. So there, and the savings is the difference between 7 and prevailing cost, say 15 cents.
Okay, we're going to move on. I have a hand over here to my left, please.
In Richard Weiner again. In essence, the Sudbury schools are going to get an increase in money that they didn't ask for this time.
Well, not yet, because we haven't created any project.
I understand
yet.
That. It's not going to happen until it happens. Right. But eventually.
So in truth.
It's a windfall.
In truth. As folks know, energy costs have sort of been up and down recently, and up and more expensive. I would love to see if we could look at, and historically, until this year, energy costs have increased at about 2% annually every year. And they're right now at about somewhere between 10 and 15 cents, depending on your contract. I would love to see it if we could say, we can buy power at 7 cents a kilowatt for the next 20 years. Because now we're under current energy costs, and we're definitely going to be under current energy costs 20 years from now. So it would be, and if the town was energy independent, that's a win-win-win for everybody, taxpayers, et cetera. Everybody would win from that.
Okay, there's a hand straight in front of me, please.
Hi. Thank you, Madam Moderator. My name is Rob Hagargea, 120 Portland Road, Sudbury. We have an example here at Lincoln Sudbury, and over the past 10 years, it has saved over $1 million. But the money went back to the town in the sense that, as Mr. Alwan was saying, the line item for Lincoln Sudbury utility charges is lower. So whatever money previously the town would have allocated X percentage to Lincoln Sudbury, out of which a part of money would have gone to pay the utility, all that it now the town incurs less. So the same 2.5%, whatever percent that comes to the Lincoln Sudbury now, it would be used for purposes of education. but should there be a change in the way it's allocated, any money saved from a particular cost center stays with that cost center, it should apply to LS for the past. The past is past, but going forward, every cost center should keep it. But I think the better way is for it to get back to the town, and when you next year, when you allocate the money, your line item for the utility is lower, so the money could be redeployed for educational purposes.
Could you just repeat your name a little slower for the record, please?
Radha Gargaya, 120 Powder Mill Road.
Thank you. Just going straight back, please. Thank you.
I have a question on the wording of the article.
Can you just state your name and address, please?
Sorry, Rebecca Cutting, 381 Maynard Road. Under the box in the warrant on page 18, there's a title. It says Program or Purpose, and the text under it says Payment of Town Electrical Costs and Funding of Energy Saving Solar Landfill Initiative. Now, you struck the word landfill out of the other part, and I thought the intention of the article was to broaden the purpose. I wonder if you could explain why you left landfill in, or if we should amend.
Mr. Alwan, are you able to answer that?
It was left in that way on advice of counsel. It is possible that that should be struck, though. In the way you're speaking to it, yes. I don't know how that gets done, Madam Moderator.
Town Council, please.
Lee Smith, KP Law, Town Council. I take the resident's point, and if someone was willing to make a motion to have the language mirror the column that says receipts, I think that would be appropriate.
Motion to amend. Is there a second? Or yes, can you get her a microphone, please?
Do we get energy from the methane from the landfill?
Okay, we're going to deal with the motion to amend first, and then we'll come back to your question.
Okay. Well, it's about the landfill.
To the best of my knowledge, no.
Okay. Or a turbine or any other thing? It's strictly a solar thing?
Yes, yes.
We're going to put that motion to amend in writing, since that is our rules.
Oh, sorry. Are you waiting for me? Just strike.
Town Council's writing up the motion to amend.
Okay.
And then Mr. Thompson will put it on our screen for us so we can all see it. And then if you could hand that to Mr. Thompson, yes, thank you.
Thank you. Okay, so we now have the motion to amend Article 30 on the screen so everybody can see that.
So
don't have a screen. So there was the motion, it was seconded, and I'll just read it out loud so everybody can see that or hear it. Motion to amend Article 30, amend General Bylaws Section 1, Chapter 33, Solar Energy Revolving Fund. I move to amend by striking the words, Saving Solar Landfill Initiatives by the Energy and Sustainability Committee, and by substituting the words, saving from renewables, solar arrays, or similar equipment installed on land, buildings, or property owned by the town, excluding land, buildings, or other property at LS High School. Anybody? And it should say by the Energy and Sustainability Committee. Oh, and Energy and Sustainability Committee after Lincoln Sudbury. Mr. Thompson. Oh, and there's a typo in the word initiative. Yes. Let's get a microphone clear, please.
Kirsten Rapeny in 45 Harness Lane. Just a quick, I think, correction. It says LS High School, but I don't want to be picky, but it should say regional. Sorry.
This is a collaborative motion to amend. Okay, so I'll read that one more time. Motion to amend Article 30, amend General Bylaws, Section 1, Chapter 33, Solar Energy Revolving Fund. I move to amend by striking the words, Saving Solar Landfill Initiative by the Energy and Sustainability Committee, and by substituting the words, Saving from Renewables, Solar Arrays, or similar equipment installed on land, buildings, or property owned by the town, excluding land, buildings, or other property at LS Regional High School by the Energy and Sustainability Committee. Okay. Does anybody wish to be heard on a motion to amend? Okay. Over to my left, please. Okay. In the middle, can we get a microphone to the middle of the audience, please? One of the scouts.
Jan Hardenberg, 7 Tippling Rock Road. What are we excluding? The land, buildings, and at the high school? Shouldn't there be a comma after what we're excluding?
Town Council.
I don't think so. Are you suggesting that there be a comma after, or in between excluding and land?
after high school.
I think it's fine as it reads.
Okay. Anybody who wishes to be heard on the motion to amend? Okay. I don't see anybody. So this is a motion to amend Article 30 as written on the screen. This requires a majority vote. Voting is now open. Few more seconds on voting. Voting is now closed on the motion to amend Article 30. That passes by well more than majority. So now we will have a discussion on the amended Article 30, if anybody wishes to be heard or have any questions. I don't see any, so let's move on to voting on amended Article 30. The quantum of passage is majority. Voting is now open on amended 30. Okay, a few more seconds on that. Voting is now closed on amended Article 30, which passes by well more than majority. Article 31, authorization to proceed with the Fairbank Community Center solar project. Motion by Select Board.
Move in the words of the article.
Is there a second? There is. Presentation by Mr. Rami, or Alwan.
Thank you. We have a brand new community center being built in our town. This is an energy-efficient building. And this new building is built to run mostly on electricity, which opens a perfect opportunity to power it with clean solar energy. Reflecting on how recent unpredictable grid purchased electricity costs have been, this article would enable the town to power the community center with solar panels at a fixed electrical cost for the next 20 years. This would also significantly increase advance the progress towards fighting climate change here in our town. This article asks that you grant the authority to the town to negotiate and enter into an agreement to lease roof space to a solar company to provide solar power for the building. This is similar to what's been done at the town landfill and what is the town is in the progress of doing at the DPW building. This is good for the town. It's good for a fight against climate change. And as I said, this will give us a predictable energy cost regardless of market forces moving forward. And the Energy and Sustainability Committee asks that you support this article.
Thank you. Select Board for a report.
Select Board supports this unanimously.
Finance Committee for a report.
The Finance Committee recommends approval by a vote of 8-0.
Does anybody wish to be heard on Article 31? Yep, straight in front of me, please.
Dave Jacob, 328 Old Lancaster. It's kind of an approach thing. I heard when we did the LS solar panel, we let the solar company finance and run it for the period of time, 20 years or however long it's going to be. I heard when we talked about the DPW that they were going to finance so they would get the savings of that financing. And now for the Fairbanks, I'm hearing, we're going to let the solar company finance it again instead of us buying it. Is that true or not true? Are we going to put up the money to build the, so we get the maximum savings?
No.
Mr.
So, both the DPW and this would be a power purchase agreement, which is we'd have a solar company put the panels on the roof. They would technically own the, no, they would own the panels. And we would agree to buy all power produced by the panels at a fixed low cost. And that would be for DPW and for the Fairbanks.
If you have a further question, just wait for the microphone to come to you, please.
It's a question of who pays for the installation. Are we putting up the money, or are we allowing them to borrow the money to build the solar panels? I'm just thinking with our bond rating, it'd be good for us.
All the costs are incurred by them, not by us.
Okay.
Anyone else on Article 31? I don't see any. The quantum of vote required for passage of Article 31 is 2/3. Please note that that is different than what was printed in your warrant. It's a change in the purpose of the use of the property. Voting is now open for Article 31. A few more seconds and voting. Voting is closed for Article 31. That passes by well more than 2/3 majority. Article 32 is withdrawn. Article 38, amend general bylaws, Article 9, Section 4200, Water Resource Protection Overlay Districts, motion by Select Board.
Move in the words of the article.
Is there a second? There is. Presentation by Planning Board Member John Hinks.
Thank you, Madam Moderator. Good evening. My name is John Hinks, and I'm on the Planning Board here to talk about Article 38. Okay. Thank you. So, Sudbury has several layers of zoning, and we're going to advance the slide. There we go. The first that we'll talk about just quickly is our base.
Can I just ask you to bring the microphone up for people at home so it's closer to your mouth? Thank you.
Yeah. Does that stay fixed? There we go. Is that better? The underlying zoning, baseline zoning, as I'm calling it here, not a technical term, reflects all of the zoning districts that we're familiar with, residential, so on and so forth, business districts, and so forth. You'll notice that most of the zoning in town is residential. There's a lot of open space, but the vast majority of our zoning is residential. There is a little bit of zoning, of course, as we know, along Route 20 and elsewhere for commercial. And we'll talk a little bit more about that in a moment. We also have in town a so-called overlay district. And this overlay district was added a number of years ago, designed to protect one of Sudbury's most important resources, our water. And so this district overlays on top of the existing underlying zoning that I just talked about. Sudbury actually has several overlay districts, so-called, but we're here tonight just to talk about the water resources protection overlay. So when you put them together, you end up with a really simple map, right? Well, not exactly, and that's what we're here to try and clarify. The Water Resources Protection Overlay District has certain challenges with it. Specifically, uses which are not very specifically delineated in Section 4200, which is the Water Resource Protection Overlay District, in the town zoning bylaws, those things that are not specifically delineated are prohibited. These include lots of uses in town that are generally considered, or not generally, but are considered by right in many of our zoning districts. So, for example, as we all know, in our commercial parts of town, we have retail stores, we have banks, we have professional businesses, and personal care, for example. Those are all considered to be uses as of right and with the underlying zoning district, but the Water Resources Protection Overlay District says nothing about them, and therefore they are considered prohibited uses. Now, we have a lot of those in town already because they were there before this overlay district was created and they're grandfathered in. So what that the result there is we have some conflict, or not real conflict, there's some confusion. One section of the zoning bylaw allows certain uses, Another, the overlay district, doesn't say anything at all, and because it says nothing at all, they're considered prohibited. That results in some real challenges for our planning staff and occasionally items that come before the planning board that we think we can very simply clean up. So what we find today is that we end up with sort of confusing explanations. And this is typically to businesses. This is generally not an issue in the residential parts of our zoning district. It's with businesses. And specifically, the use case that comes up some is you've been operating a business. Let's say it's, well, I was going to say banks, but now's not a good time to talk about closing banks. Let's say you're operating a retail store, and you decide you want to take that store, no longer be a retail business, and you want to open an office for attorneys, let's say, for example. Both of those uses are not specifically called out in the Section 4200, the Water Resources Protection Overlay District, and therefore they're considered prohibited. And that results in some confusion by the town, even though the underlying zoning district that we talked about that first page explicitly says in the village business district, for example, that you can operate those businesses. So what we would propose to do is a fairly simple change to the Section 4200 of the zoning bylaws, and it is to add new language of that section that allows uses which are permitted as of right or by special permit in the underlying zoning district, in the Water Resources Protection Overlay District. These would be allowed by special permit issued by the Planning Board. So in that example I just gave you, you want to switch from one type of use that's allowed to another. You would do so by going to the Planning Board and making the case for that, and the Planning Board, assuming it had no adverse impact on our water resources, could issue a special permit for that use. So a yes vote for this will enable clarifying the zoning structure between those two layers of zoning and grant special permitting authority to the Planning Board. Thank you.
Thank you. Select Board for report.
Select Board supports unanimously.
Does anybody wish to be heard on Article 38? Okay. In the back, please.
Siobhan Hellinger, 55 Washington Drive. I just, with your example about banks, I understood, you know, what you were saying and, yeah, the general commercial type businesses. But in the warrant, I just want to understand or get clarified. It talks about hazardous or toxic materials, animal manure, commercial fertilizers, road salt, de-icing chemicals. And so I immediately think of Cavicchio's with all their fertilizer, all their the elements that are within their property. So how does this affect them or a business like them that's already existing?
Right.
Mr. Hinks?
Yeah, thank you. Cavicchio's is an existing business, and they predate the Water Resource Protection Overlay District, and so this change wouldn't affect them at all.
Even if they changed some part of their business within that property?
Right. So one of the uses that is allowed presently, without any change to the language in the bylaw for Section 4200, the Water Resources Protection Overlay District, is you are allowed to expand the use of a particular use. So that's specifically called out at present in the bylaw, and we're not proposing any change in that.
Anyone else on Article 38? I don't see anyone. The quantum of vote required for passage of Article 38 is 2/3. Voting is now open. Few more seconds. Voting is now closed on Article 38. That passes by well more than two-thirds majority. Article 39, amend general bylaws, affordable housing trust bylaw, motion by Select Board.
Move it. Move in the words of the article.
Is there a second? There is. Presentation by Town Manager Sheehan.
Thank you, Madam Moderator. Andy Sheehan, Town Manager. So Article 39 is essentially a housekeeping article to clarify or put in place a bylaw for the Affordable Housing Trust. The Affordable Housing Trust has been in existence for a number of years, the purpose of which is the preservation and creation of affordable housing in Sudbury for the benefit of low and moderate income residents. The trust was adopted in 2006. It was adopted at that time by the adoption of Chapter 44, Section 55C, which is the Affordable Housing Trust statute in Massachusetts. Typically what happens is you adopt the statute and you adopt a bylaw that sort of implements that statute and adds any local variations from the statute. In 2006, when Sudbury adopted the statute, there was no bylaw associated with that. So the Affordable Housing Trust has been operating, the committee has been operating under the statute, but also under a sort of understanding that was presented in 2006 to town meeting and which is memorialized in the trust document. So the purpose of Article 39 tonight is simply to adopt a bylaw that codifies what is in the trust document that's recorded at the Registry of Deeds. Puts in, again, codifies the practices that have been in place for the last almost 20 years and more specifically codifies those unique characteristics here that are not laid out in the statute, a couple of which are to come to you, to town meeting, before acquisition and sale of land. Other things, the trust goes to the Select Board prior to action. That's not required under the statute, but is a local practice here. So this would just codify that existing practice.
Thank you. Select Board for a report.
Select Board supports this unanimously.
Does anybody wish to be heard on Article 39? Yep, right there, please.
Just a minor question because I don't see it in the text of the amendment. Rebecca Cutting, 381 Maynard Road. How are the trustees appointed? Is that by under the state statute? I don't see it here in the bylaw.
And can you just state your name and address, please?
381 Maynard Road.
Thank you.
Thank you, Madam Moderator. Trustees are appointed by the Select Board.
Anyone else on 39? Yep, in this front center, please.
Just to Jan Hugmerg, 7 Tippling Rock Road. So the existing trust document, it still exists and functions, and that's where the appointment of the trustees and what the trustees do is still there. That's still a valid document.
Mr. Sheehan?
Yes, it is. That is laid out in the statute, and that is the process that we've been utilizing since 2006. That's the process that will stay in place.
Thank you.
Are there comments or questions on this article? I see none. So the quantum of vote required for passage of Article 39 is majority. Voting is now open.
few more seconds. Voting is now closed for Article 39, which passes by well more than majority. Article 40, General Bylaw for the Placement of Small Wireless Facilities in the Public Ways. Motion by Select Board.
Move in the words of the article.
Is there a second? There is. Presentation by Mr. Sheehan.
Thank you, Madam Moderator. Again, Andy Sheehan, Town Manager. Article 40 proposes a new general bylaw, a non-zoning bylaw, to regulate the installation and development of small wireless facility networks in town. This would apply to small wireless facilities, which I'll describe in a moment, located within public ways. Does not regulate small wireless facilities that are located on private property, such as towers and roofs and the like. So small wireless facilities are necessary for the development of the next generation of cellular technology, which is 5G. We've been hearing about 5G for the last 5 years or so. We are currently, for the most part, operating in a 4G environment. 5G is the next generation, linking telephone and internet networks, thereby connecting mobile, laptop, and desktop devices. The industry has been moving in this direction for a number of years, largely because of the speed with which data can be transmitted. With 4G, your maximum is about 1 gigabyte per second. And with 5G, over time, not immediately, but over time, maximum speeds could be up around 10 gigabytes per second. Particularly useful for streaming video and other high load types of service. So, small wireless facilities are those components that we would see around town. They are antennas, transceivers, mounting structures, enclosures, things like that. They are typically located on utility poles, usually on existing utility poles, but also can be located on signal mast arms and things like that, other types of infrastructure that is existing in the road network. The existing tower system that we've been living with for the last almost 30 years now does not really support the 5G environment that we're moving into. That is a lower density, or it can operate on a lower density system. The 5G networks require a denser, more closely connected network of facilities, and so that's what is driving this. So these are a couple of examples of the types of facilities that qualify as small wireless facilities. You can see they're typically high on the pole, not always at the top of the pole, and they can take a number of different forms. Oops, sorry about that. This one on a decorative mast arm or a decorative light post that you would see in a downtown area or in an area where you may have your utilities buried underground. And then this is a more traditional cobra head fixture with the small wireless facility mounted on the top of that. So a likely question would be, well, what if we don't want them in Sudbury? What if we just want to say no? And frankly, under the federal laws that are in place governing wireless technology and wireless communication, and that's regulated by the Federal Communications Commission and the Telecommunications Act of 1996, there's a federal preemption. And if you think about it, laws, they say it flows downhill laws flow downhill, and so we cannot regulate up. We cannot regulate up as a town. We cannot regulate up to the state level. We cannot also regulate up to the federal level. So that federal preemption prohibits us from saying no, but does allow us to regulate the placement, construction, and modification of these networks and these facilities. So again, we can regulate, but we cannot prohibit. And the goals of the bylaw are to preserve harmonious land uses, protect health and safety and community welfare, visual resources, aesthetics, but also allow for the orderly development of these networks while encouraging the innovation of the development of innovative technologies. The biggest thing that this bylaw does is establish a set of uniform standards by which applicants can come in and receive permission for their facilities. The Select Board is the permit granting authority, the licensing authority. As it is now under laws that have been in effect for over 100 years, anytime a utility company wants to put a pole up on a town road, they have to come to the Select Board with what is known as a pole petition. There's a pole petition hearing, and that is granted or denied or granted with conditions. This would follow a similar path, but there, again, are the contents are laid out, the design guidelines are laid out, the timeline within which the board must issue its decision. There's an annual recertification of these facilities, and then there's also a requirement, including a surety that is posted for the removal of these facilities when they're no longer required.
Thank you. Select Board for report.
Select Board supports this unanimously.
Does anybody wish to be heard on Article 40, comments or questions? Straight back in front of me.
Leslie Fredema, 32 Moran Circle. I guess I have a lot of concerns over this article that I just wanted to ask about and express. One of my concerns is I believe that, if I'm reading Section 8 correctly, it really limits the reasons the Select Board can grant with conditions or deny cell phone tower placement. And it seems to take away the Select Board's right to determine if there's really a coverage need in an area or ask a carrier to place an area in a perhaps more appropriate location. It just seems to me that it kind of ties the Select Board and the town's hands a bit in terms of saying no to a carrier of where we might or might not want a cell tower placed. The other question I really had was related to the regulations in the bylaw, in particular, if there are any accommodations to allow the town to have the carriers really modify the wireless radiation admissions to ensure that the carriers are complying with FCC and federal government standards. And the last is I just feel like this is a really important article, and I'm not sure there's been enough discussion around it in the town boards or community study, or I'm wondering if any independent consultants, experts have been retained to really help us review this policy.
Mr. Sheehan, can you answer some of those questions?
I can. Thank you, Madam Moderator. So I'll take the last one first. The town retained the services of a consultant from a company called Isotrope, a gentleman named David Maxson, and he helped with the development of this bylaw. And he is one of the leaders in the telecommunications field in terms of assisting communities in regulating wireless communications facilities. And if you think back to your first point, I want to make it clear that this is not regulating cell towers in the manner that we recognize them now and that we've been dealing with them for the last 25 or so years. But it is similar to that process. There is the federal structure, regulatory structure that's in place, that has been in place since 1996, that made it very difficult for communities to say no to the placement of cell towers. But these are, again, these are the small units that would be generally mounted on utility poles that are along the street. So it's not new towers. It's a different sort of a facility. And then in terms of the board's ability to condition or deny, if, again, and this goes back to the federal preemption, if the carrier can prove that there is a gap in their coverage, and they have to prove that, and the board can bring in an independent expert to verify that and look at that data from the carrier. But if the carrier can prove that there is a coverage gap, it makes it very difficult for the board to say no, because there's a perceived public need to develop these networks. And then the last item you mentioned was the radio waves. Not radiation, but
emissions.
Thank you. We are not allowed to regulate that at the local level. These have been deemed to be emissions have been deemed to be not at a level that is harmful to the public. And again, that goes back to the federal regulation that federal umbrella of regulation that hovers over all of this.
Other comments or questions? Over to my left, kind of in the middle, please.
Thank you. Frank Huntowski, 42 Cutler Farm Road. All the pictures you're showing are these sort of little boxes on existing structures. Is there any possibility that under this bylaw that a new pole would be put up? Looks like it could be 50 feet and possibly put up in the public way in front of any of our houses. Is that possible at all?
Mr. Sheehan?
Thank you, Madam Moderator. That is possible, and there is a there's a section dealing with that in the bylaw, and there are limitations on what the height of that pole can be. Let me just go to that quickly. So if there's an existing pole that they can locate on based on its location, but they need to be higher, they can add 5 feet to that pole. You can either replace it. Sometimes they can add a riser off of that pole to gain the extra feet. The maximum is 50 feet for a pole, and most of the poles that are installed now are around 40 feet, 40 to 44 feet. So it is a little bit higher than what you see now in new construction.
Okay, do you have one quick follow-up question, please?
I just want to make it absolutely clear. If we vote for this, we're all saying we could have a 50-foot pole in the right-of-way in front of our houses. That's correct. That's what you said. So that's what we're voting for here, whether we want to give permission for a 50-foot pole in front of any of our houses. Thank you.
Mr. Sheehan?
Thank you, Madam Moderator. Yeah, that is correct, but it needs to be clarified that the utility doesn't decide where that pole goes. They put a petition in front of the select board. The select board holds a hearing. There is notice to abutters, and then the board can condition that. So if they, a carrier proposes to put it right in front of your house, but there's a vacant lot to the left of you or to the right of you, or there's a better place to locate that can be conditioned by the board.
OK,
Okay, there's two questions straight in the back, so I want to start in the very last row. There was a woman who had her hand up for quite a while, yes? And then we'll move forward.
Thank you. Marie Rock, 26 Whispering Pine Road. There are no poles in my neighborhood, not on Whispering Pine, not on Newton Road, and our neighborhood kind of likes it that way. Are you telling us that this utility can determine where within our neighborhood that they can place a pole and, you know, the heck with you to the neighborhood?
Mr. Sheehan?
Thank you, Madam Moderator. I am not saying that. What I'm saying is that if they, what they will do is if they need to find a location in that neighborhood, and they may or may not, there may be enough coverage from nearby that they would not need to add a pole or they would not need to add a facility. But if they did indeed determine that they needed to add a facility in that neighborhood, they would need, by virtue of the permitting process through the select board, they would need to do that in such a way to minimize the impact on the neighborhood. It could be that, and I don't want to speculate, but just to give for instances, if there are decorative light poles in the neighborhood, that would be one way for them to do that. If there are not light poles in the neighborhood, they could put something up that would look like a light pole that would not be intrusive, would not be as intrusive as, for instance, a pressure-treated utility pole like we see throughout most of the community. But that would be part of the licensing process through the select board.
Okay, and then there was somebody with a hat. Yes.
Ms. Moderator, Diana Warren, 32 Old Framingham Road. 20 years ago, I was the chairman of the Wayland Planning Board Wireless Bylaw Study Committee. We enacted a strong bylaw in Wayland with 90-foot setbacks and with requirements that would comply with the requirements of Section 704 of the Telecommunications Act. One of those requirements is that any decision by the local government must be based on significant evidence in the written record. This bylaw's, one of its fatal flaws, is that it does not require any information through the application process for radio frequency radiation amounts, for coverage. There's no specifics of the nature that would be significant evidence for the select board to deny an application. It's devoid of asking for the information for the select board to understand what the facility is about and how, if it's not appropriate, that it can be denied or that another location can be considered. And also, I personally am very disappointed in this process that's gotten us to the point of this bylaw, because this is a very serious issue. The FCC was just reprimanded by a federal court in D.C. that they have been arbitrary, capricious to not look at the science the last 30 years to revise the safety standard. There's nothing in this bylaw that will allow the town. We don't even know what the frequency is, the power signal density. We don't know anything. We know, we talk about size and paint color. Well, as a citizen, I'm more concerned that the carrier comply with the FCC safety standard, and there's nothing in this bylaw that monitors what the carrier's doing. They can switch out. They can emit signal beyond the FCC safety standard, and we won't know anything about it, and we won't have any ability to do anything about it. So I strongly urge town meeting to reject this and put it back for a study, for a lot of community discussion, because if this passes, we're unleashing something that we cannot turn back the clock on. That's how serious this is. And as someone who has attended congressional hearings in Washington and been involved in this issue, this is not the way to go about it, to have town council and five members of the select board who hired an industry insider. Mr. Maxson is a member of IEEE COMAR, that is the Committee on Man and Radiation. And he is one of the movers and shakers in America and actually worldwide to keep the safety standards at the unprotected level that they are. So, town meeting, please join me in voting this article down. Thank you.
Okay, there was a gentleman kind of to the, my left of the pole there raising his card. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Moderator. Larry Walpe, 25 Wright Road. I'd just like to ask if the school committee has been informed or brought into the process of developing this bylaw, because utility poles, as we know, are in front of many of our schools. I know that recently the town's wireless industry representative suggested a cell facility for the noise school property. So is the school committee involved in this process?
Mr. Sheehan?
To my knowledge, the school committee was not involved in this process. But again, a lot of this work took place before I came on board here.
Okay. Well,
then it certainly seems like things should be revisited.
We'll come to the front with Ms. Rapinion, and then we'll go to the gentleman behind her.
Kirsten Rapinion, 45 Harness Lane. My question is this. With the current situation now, without this bylaw, what will occur if a cell carrier comes in and wants to do this? Does the town then remain unable to regulate the where and the why fors, which is what you described in the bylaw? Are we then even more vulnerable to having a pole put somewhere that we don't want it to? And then my second question is, I think that you mentioned that we as a community from the FCC law cannot regulate and talk about radio frequency and so forth. So if that is the case, then I think part of the comments that I just heard are relatively moot, because we can't discuss it and we can't control that.
I'm going to have Mr. Sheehan answer that. If you could just turn the microphone two seats behind or two rows behind you while Mr. Sheehan answers that question, please.
Thank you, Madam Moderator. So we are certainly better off and better equipped to respond to an application if we have a bylaw in place and we have a set of standards in place. And perhaps more importantly, to have a clear set of guidelines and desires laid out for the carriers. It is as convenient as it is to vilify them. For the most part, they are not interested in picking fights, because they're coming into our communities on a regular basis for any number of different things. So it doesn't benefit them to fight with us or to lie to us just for getting one facility in. And again, these are not the towers. These are not the 150-foot towers that we were looking at 20 and 25 years ago. These are smaller units. And to the prior speaker's question, yes, we are prohibited from engaging or regulating the emissions out of these facilities.
Okay. So the gentleman who has the microphone, please.
Bob Leggett, 138 Concord Road. How close to a school would this allow them to install one of these units?
Just bring it a little closer, because we can't hear you.
How close to a school would this allow them to put this unit there?
Madam Moderator. Thank you. I don't believe that there is a setback from school facilities. Looking at that quickly, and I don't see any setback in that regard.
So does that mean that it could be as close as they want it to be?
Mr. Chan?
Again, this is only governing these facilities within the public rights of way. So this is not governing them on school property, on town property, or on private property. So only within public rights of way that the town of Sudbury controls.
Okay, thank you.
Mr. Russo, would the select board would like to make a comment?
So I think the select board just would like to clarify its position on this a little bit. And I think I can speak for our board when I think what this comes down to is control. And I think what everyone would like to hear is that by passing this bylaw, we have ultimate full control over the location of these devices. And that's just not simply the case due to the federal law that, as Mr. Sheehan explained, that preempts us. But we already received one application that we had really very, very, very little control over how it would be sited or located or its height or its appearance or anything like that. And that one was fortunately withdrawn. But we took that as a warning that more of these devices will be coming our way. This bylaw will give us greater control than we will have without it. It won't be full protection because that's not legally possible, but this will help us protect our citizens, and this will help us make sure that any sightings or locations of these devices are in, you know, as suitable as we can make them. There's requirements around radio frequency emission analysis. There's requirements around documentation of the equipment that will be used. This will provide us protections, maybe not perfect protection, but this will give us far greater protections than we will have without it. And we know more of these are coming. If we get this in now, any future applications will need to comply with this. If this fails, any ones that come in before this type of bylaw gets passed will not need to adhere. So Select Board supports this in order to gain additional control and protections around this issue.
So I want to be mindful of the time. I'm going to take one more comment from the gentleman in the blue, and then we'll move to vote.
Hi. Nick Pernice, 255 Peckham Road. I've got some real problems with this warrant, and I'd like to direct everyone's attention to the drawing on page 33 and ask you, is there anybody here that doesn't see the tower in the picture? Anybody here that doesn't see the tower in the picture? It's just a quiz. These guys, the telecom industry and the utility industry, I don't know if there's one person you could find who wouldn't say there would be a need for something. I guarantee you, you ask any of them and they'll tell you there's a need. Having dealt with the Eversource project for 6 years in this town, I can assure you they're going to find a need to build out infrastructure. That's their job. The one thing I really dislike is where you say, shall avoid attaching to poles that are within 20 feet of an existing driveway to enable the property owner to take advantage of trees or other screening that could shield the wireless equipment from view. Is that a setback? Is that 20 feet? Is that what you're considering a setback? Because if it is, it's totally inadequate. You say you guys have our back in the select board, but frankly, you know, the fact that you could have joined in on the land suit for this town and continue to fight Eversource.
So that's your comments are now going off
yep.
topic,
well,
so please direct it specifically to the article
listen,
at question.
The select board has said they're there to have my back, and I'm just
this
addressing.
Is a discussion on Article 40. That's
well,
your
I don't
first
believe,
warning, sir.
Okay, I get you. I just don't believe they have my back. And you have to have your ducks in a row when you're trying to protect our health and our safety. Thank you.
So I'm going to move to
The vote on Article 40, quantum of vote required for passage, is majority. We have not used our devices in a little while, so it may take a little bit longer to vote, and voting is now open. Few more seconds for voting. Voting is now closed on Article 40 that passes by more than majority. Article 41, CPA Fund 6773 Knobscott Road Acquisition, Design, and Construction. Motion by Select Board.
Move in the words of the article.
Is there a second? There is. And I believe this is a joint presentation by Sherry Klein from CPC, Carmen Gentile, Chair of Sudbury Affordable Housing Trust, and Adam Ducuzneau, Director of Planning and Community Development.
Thank you, Madam Moderator.
You can just bring the microphone down so it's more at your level. Thank you.
So I'm actually doing a little introduction of CPC, so I don't want to cut into the time for the article. But good evening. My name is Sherry Klein. I'm the chair of the Community Preservation Committee, and typically I give a little presentation before the CPC articles to tell you about what the committee does and what the act is about. But tonight on the consent calendar, or last night, you approved all but two of the articles that the CPC recommended to town meeting. So, do we have a little clicker thing? Which way do I go? Okay, so the committee is made up of 9 members. 7 of them are elected to other boards in town, and 2 are appointed by the Board of Selectmen. So usually we don't know who's going to be on their committee, but now we know that John Hicks is leaving us. So I want to thank him for his 4 years of service on the Community Preservation Committee. So this act was passed in 2002 here in Sudbury. So for the last 20 years, we have successfully recommended, and the town has managed 118 projects for the preservation of the community in the areas of community housing, open space and recreation, and historic preservation. Some examples of the application approved by town meeting were those submitted by the Sudbury Historic Society for the acquisition and restoration of the Loring Parsonage to house our museum, from the Goodnow Library for the restoration of the beautiful historic room, from Park and Rec Commission for the acquisition and improvement of the town's playing fields and tennis courts, from the Sudbury Housing Authority and the Sudbury Housing Trust for the preservation and creation of community housing, and also from the town for the preservation of 574 acres of open space, such as Knobscott Mountain and 8 of our iconic farms. Okay, so we are charged with presenting articles to town meeting to appropriate or reserve the accumulated reserves. A minimum of 10% has to be appropriated for each of the 3 categories: community housing, historic preservation, and open space. And as Eric mentioned last night, the funds for these purposes are separate from the town's operating budget. They come from a local surcharge on our real estate taxes and a state match, and they are kept in a separate designated interest-bearing account for the purposes I've mentioned. From FY22, the surcharge received has totaled close to $32 million, and the state match has totaled close to $14 million. So as of the end of FY22, Sudbury has raised, received, and earned close to $48 million in community preservation funds. Sudbury's residents, departments, and committees have taken full advantage of the opportunities made possible by the Act. Every fall, we solicit applications for funding. These are reviewed by the committee to make sure that the applications are permissible under the statute and fit within the annual budget for the committee. In addition to evaluating the applications for eligibility under the state law and our local standards, the committee feels a responsibility to husband the resources to plan for the future. This policy has stood us in good stead this year as we had an unusually large number of applications. And fortunately, we have the money available in the town's CPA fund to cover the expenses should town meeting approve the applications. I also want to highlight that for the past several years, the committee has put forward an article to revert unused funds, which you approved on the consent calendar last night. So if a project is approved by town meeting but either doesn't move forward or the funds are not needed for the designated appropriation, after vote at town meeting, the funds are reverted back to the town's general CPC fund. So thank you.
Good evening. My name is Carmen Gentile. I'm chair of the Sudbury Housing Trust, and together with the other members of the trust, we work to create affordable housing for moderate and low-income folks in town, and also to maintain existing properties. So this is a project that we have been working on for about 2 years now, and I'd like to turn it over to Adam DeChano, our Director of Planning and Community Development, to get into a little more specifics. A project that we've been working together in partnership with the Sudbury Housing Authority to develop rental and or property to own. Thank you.
To the moderator. Adam DeChano, Director of Planning and Community Development. Good evening. So as Mr. Gentile just noted, I'm just going to highlight a few particular aspects about the property. So we can skip over this slide. This is the motion that's in your warrant, seeking $438,000. And so that is going to be for a few different things about this property, which I'll discuss. So this, as Mr. Gentile mentioned, about 2 years ago, a little over 2 years ago, the town was approached by the property owner of the Boy Scouts of America through their property owner group, the Mayflower Council, with curiosity if the town was interested in purchasing the land. They first approached the conservation office, who then felt there was not a strong interest in this property. And then they passed it along to see if the Housing Trust might be interested. The Housing Trust thought they might be, and then they started to partner with the Sudbury Housing Authority to conduct an analysis for the property. Both of these entities have allocated funds, and they've been working with two consulting groups, Beals and Thomas, and also the Cambridge Housing Authority. So they've been performing site feasibility and analysis of the property in terms of the topography, the wetlands, what can be constructed. So this is about a 5.4-acre parcel. You can see the wetlands in the lower part of the property. There are some existing buildings on this parcel, but as of the analysis that's been conducted to this point, it doesn't seem like any of those will be able to be reused. But what has been determined is there is a fairly significant piece of land, sort of that blank space. Sort of generally speaking in this area, there is an upland area that can be used for some type of development. What that might be is still remains to be seen. It could be one unit, it could be more than that, but there's many factors that go into that, including a financial feasibility analysis, which the Cambridge Housing Authority is still undertaking. So they hope to have more information about that. So the funds that are being sought this evening from town meeting are to help contribute to that analysis, but primarily to potentially purchase the property should the Housing Trust and Housing Authority engage in those discussions with the property owner. And then this is just some of the information that I've already been discussing. I do want to note, I should have pointed this out. I'm sorry. The green hatched area on the sort of north and left side of the property, that is a conservation restriction on it. This piece of land does not. So that's sort of how the Boy Scouts arrived at potential interest in this piece of land. The consultants have also engaged and gotten positive feedback from the National Heritage and Endangered Species Program that development could occur at this property. As I mentioned, the development financing analysis is underway. So again, this is what the funding would be used for: continued site feasibility analysis, possible purchase of the property, and then if it were acquired and there were remaining funds, it would be used for the design and potentially even the construction of what might happen at the site. And so I think we'll stop there and answer any questions that anyone might have. Thank you.
Thank you, Select Board, for a report.
Select Board supports this unanimously, and I'll just add that I think we all of us together supported the idea of further feasibility. There are some constraints on this site, and I think all of us thought that was a wise choice to continue that feasibility analysis. It had unanimous support from the Select Board.
Finance Committee for report.
The Finance Committee recommended approval by a vote of 7-1.
Does anybody have any questions or comments on Article 41? Okay. Ms. Brown, please.
Pat Brown, 34 Whispering Pine Road. My understanding is that there is no agreement on purchase price for the property. There is a concept for what might be built, but not exactly a design. And there's no actual agreement yet about how this project would be constructed or financed. So my question is, where did $483,000 come from?
Are you able to answer that question?
I can, yes.
Okay. Yes, please.
Thank you, through the moderator. So originally the Housing Trust came forward to the Community Preservation Committee with a request of $438,000 plus $210,000. I'm not great at math. And the reason why that was sort of combined together is because the $210,000 would represent an approximate 10% allocation from the estimated FY24 revenues. And then I think it comes out to a fairly round number for the remainder of that, which would be 650. But in any event, so when they brought that to the Community Preservation Committee, which I think was a good idea, they broke it into two articles. One, simply the 10%, the Housing Trust allocation, which, as Ms. Klein noted, you approved last evening, and then the remaining funds to be used towards the negotiation of a possible purchase of the property. This fell within the range of very, very, very preliminary discussions about what the property might cost or be worth with the property owner, but I stress very preliminary discussions because we have not had those at length with the property owner at this time.
Okay, and then straight in front of me, with you with the microphone.
Kathy Jacob, Old Lancaster Road, 328 Old Lancaster Road. Are there any historic sites, cemeteries that had the last, people died from smallpox or anything like that? Any historic things that are in that property that will have to be worked around?
Mr. Chenow?
Thank you, through the moderator. The analysis to this point has not indicated that there is any types of those historic elements on the property. It has been used as there are structures on it that were used for housing up until a few years ago, maybe 4 or 5 years ago, and there has been no indication from the property owner that any of those elements exist at this time.
Anyone else on this article? I'm just hold that thought 1 second. We have somebody in the middle right there.
Rob Roussel, 78 Willis Lake Drive.
Yeah, 1 minute, point of order, yes. Hold on, can we just get a microphone to you, please?
Yeah, Carmen Gentile, 33 Surrey Lane. I don't believe the motion has been made under the article yet. I'd like to make a motion.
I don't recall if
I'd like
it was,
to make a motion
but I will
under the
ask
article.
The Select Board to make the motion again.
If I missed it earlier, I move in the words of the article.
Thank you.
And does that have a second? It does. Thank you. Go ahead, sir.
I'll do it again. Rob Roussel, 78 Willis Lake Drive. So I think that Sudbury owns and has affordable housing that currently sits vacant. Maybe that could be confirmed or refuted. And if it's true, then why should we spend money to study land for a potential purchase and build more homes if we already have homes sitting vacant? Thank you.
Mr. DeChino?
Through the moderator. So I can say that the Sudbury Housing Authority has taken steps to analyze various properties around town. Many of those are town-owned, to see if there is the potential to develop additional units of affordable housing. And the Housing Trust also has currently looks at opportunities, such as this one, for potential other opportunities to develop affordable housing. So, you know, taking a step a few years back, five, six, seven, 8 years ago in Sudbury, you know, this community was below the 10% affordable housing threshold. And the Housing Trust and Housing Authority continue to work to bring affordable housing units to the community, because eventually at some point in time, if you do not continue to slowly build your affordable housing stock, new market rate units will be added and the community will presumably drop below that 10%. Additionally, it brings great diversity to the community, which and many people believe is a strong benefit, including our office, and helps the overall housing stock of the community.
Other, yes, in the back, please.
Rebecca Cutting, 381 Maynard Road. I think you could probably do a survey on that property to look for historic resources, and it would be advisable, especially in light of the study that we recently finished on that subject. I just want to assure the hall that the smallpox cemetery is on the restricted property further up the hill. My question is, do you have enough frontage? It looks a little tight. I mean, it's a nice big balloon property, but they don't have much. They seem to have reserved quite a bit of property that has frontage on Knobscot.
Mr. DeChino?
Through the moderator. Any type of development that would occur at this property, the preliminary discussions have indicated it would likely need to go through some type of a comprehensive permitting process with the Zoning Board of Appeals due to factors such as the one that you indicated.
Anyone else? I don't see anyone, so the quantum vote required for passage of Article 41 is majority. Voting on Article 41 is now open. A few more seconds for voting. Voting on Article 41 is now closed. That passed by more than majority. Article 45, CPA Fund, Frank Feely Fields, Improvements, Phase 2, motion by Select Board.
Move in the words of the article.
Is there a second? There is. Presentation by Ms. Klein. And I do want to add that this is our second to last article, so if people could stay so that we maintain our quorum, that would be appreciated. Thank you.
Dennis Minoni, Sudbury Park and Recreation Director, here to present Frank Feely Field Improvements. I say phase one, phase two, so we're in phase one right now. And just to update folks quickly, because it kind of goes together. So phase one, we dealt with some safety netting along the tennis court side. We also are adding new dugouts. We're adding walkways for ADA. We're designing, which was done for phase one, and going to be in the process of preliminary design for phase two, which brought us here today. We're doing some drainage work, some gate fixes, and batting cages, guardrails. Now, along phase two, we're going to continue to fully out-design this. We're adding drainage to the lower fields, additional dugouts, player benches, adding ADA walkways at the lower fields, and adding irrigation for the lower fields as well as bleachers. Here's just some pictures of what the amenities will generally look like. There'll be a bleacher, there'll be dugouts for shade and shelter, and there'll be player benches within the dugouts as well. And as far as the drainage goes, as many of you know, Frank Feely Field is very, very wet, especially at Lower Feely. A day like today, unfortunately, the ladies couldn't play softball. It would just be too wet. The ground doesn't allow for drainage. So we hired Warner Larson to do some studies and some initial design work, and they're going to come up with a slit drain system. Here's kind of a picture. What they would do is almost similar to your if you ever had irrigation put in at your house. They would run the slit machine down, put some sand and some piping in there to drain the water off. The budget for this, as we know in the article, it's $799,668. We did get additional funding from the Meadowwalk funding for $100,000 through the Park and Rec Commission for a total budget. We're pretty firm with these numbers. Warner Larson, we did put a pretty big contingency, as you can see by the bigger slide there. As everybody knows, the nature of bidding projects out has been kind of up and down, so we wanted to make sure, as the CPC committee alluded to earlier, any unused funds revert back to CPC, so we wanted to make sure we had enough to bid the project out as well. And I'm happy to answer any questions.
Thank you. Select Board for report.
Select Board supports unanimously for the reasons of safety, usability, equity, and parity across softball and baseball, as explained by Dennis. Again, we support it unanimously.
Finance Committee for report.
And the Finance Committee supports approval unanimously as well.
CIAC for report.
CIAC recommends approval of this by a vote of 6-0. The CIAC recognizes that the Feely Fields typically get flooded, as was just stated, and appreciate the safety and the drainage that will be taking place as a result of this article. Thank you.
And Commission on Disability, in the back, please. Can you get a microphone to her? Thank you.
Thank you, Madam Moderator, Kay Bell, for the Commission on Disability. The Commission on Disability voted unanimously to support this article. From the concept and design stages forward, the project has proactively included accessible pathways to the various elements. The commitment to inclusive design principles in this complex athletic field project will serve well the needs of athletes of all abilities and their families. I would like to just also add that I'm hopeful that in the design and implementation of additional elements like the bleachers, there will also be accessible seating there too. So we do support this.
Questions on comments on Article 45? Straight in front of me, please.
Hi, Tim Walsh, 236 Raymond Road. Question, will this affect the marshland behind there in any way at all?
Mr. Mimmo?
Thank you, Ms. Palmer. So through the process of final design, we'll have to go through the planning board and watershed and all the permitting process. We haven't gotten to that stage yet because we haven't had a full-out design, but we would go before the town for any additional permitting and needs.
Okay, thank you.
Anyone else? I don't see anyone. Quantum of vote required for passage of Article 45 is majority. Voting is now open. A few more seconds for voting. Voting is now closed on Article 45, which passes by more than majority. Before we take up the last article, I would once again like to thank all of town staff who worked so hard to put all of this together. Their hard work ensured that you, the voters, were fully informed on all of the articles and that town meeting itself was conducted in a safe, effective, and professional manner. They are all excellent, and we could not do this without them. Also thanks to town clerk and town council who made sure every step of the way that we have met our legal obligations. It is extremely helpful to me to have such clear and competent advice over the course of the meeting, and I very much appreciate their guidance. Finally, thanks to you, our citizens legislators, for caring enough about your town to participate in this process. Your ability to balance passion for the issues with a civility of tone was, as usual, exemplary and much appreciated by everyone on this stage. The town clerk has asked me to remind all recently elected and appointed officials that they should take the oath of office from her at the conclusion of today's meeting if they had not already been sworn in. And one last thing, according to Article 4, Section 1 of the town's bylaws, is the responsibility of the moderator to appoint members to vacant seats on the Finance Committee before the end of annual town meeting. This year, the terms of two members are set to expire, and one member has resigned mid-term. I had the application for the Finance Committee posted on the town's website as well as on social media. I was fortunate to receive more applications than I had available positions. All of the applicants were well qualified. In sum, I have made the following appointments. Mara Carty, appointed for a one-year term to fill the vacancy from the member who resigned. Michael Joachim, reappointed for a three-year term. Ryan Lynch, appointed for a three-year term. Thank you to Michael to agreeing to serve, to continue on Finance Committee. This is one of the most intense time volunteer positions that anyone could make. I also want to thank Sonny Parenti and Blair Capel for all the hours they have put in on our behalf with FinCom over the years. And now we'll take up Article 55, Petition Article, Control of Firearms Zoning, motion by Petitioner Frank Reap.
I move in the words of the article.
Is there a second? There is. Presentation by Mr. Reap.
This article affects a simple change to the table of principal use regulations of the zoning bylaw. The purpose of this article is to ban the manufacture and sale of guns and ammunition in Sudbury in the interest of public health and safety. The increasing access to firearms in our society is coupled with ever-increasing death rates, which is a threat to our security and social cohesion. This article does not control the ownership or use of firearms in Sudbury. It simply bans a certain commercial activity through zoning. When the creation of the Village Business District was approved by a vote of town meeting 3 decades ago, it included a provision banning firearms and explosives. Unfortunately, when the zoning bylaw was redrafted for greater clarity a few years later, that provision and others were lost through careless editing. This article was initiated to correct that error and extend it to all districts. The Commonwealth of Massachusetts has relatively stringent gun laws, but as we have seen, they are not uniformly enforced and loopholes are always being exploited. Fortunately, the rate of gun deaths is not as high in Massachusetts as it is in some other states, but sadly, it is much higher than in most other countries. The ready access to guns everywhere risks violence and death both intentional and unintentional, by one's own hand and by others. Reduction in the demand for retail and industrial space in Sudbury means that much space now languishes on the lease market. Encouraging landlords to lease to tenants with unconventional or questionable business models in order to maintain any rental income at all. In the course of the last 9 months, we have seen a long series of news articles in the Boston Globe about a large nest of unconventional and illegal gun dealers in one building in Littleton. operating in violation of state regulations and without regular inspections by local police and federal authorities. Some of these weapons have been used in criminal activity, including straw purchases. Excuse me, including straw purchases. This has led the town of Littleton and its citizenry to study the sale and demolition of the entire building as a way of halting this unwanted activity. This article does not prevent hunters from loading ammunition in their own homes, but it does ban the building and merchandising of firearms and ammunition within the town's borders for commercial purposes. Further, it does not impinge on anyone's rights under the Second Amendment of the Constitution. However, individuals should not be tempted by ready access to firearms to spontaneously commit violence against themselves, classmates, or family members. The darkest impulses of the human soul should not be exploited for profit. A decade ago, the horror of mass murder of dozens of students and teachers at Sandy Hook Elementary School sickened and shocked us to the core. We realized Newtown, Connecticut was much like Sudbury and not all that far away. Guns had become more lethal, available, and numerous. Guns were no longer just the instruments of hunters and the police. There had come to be more guns than people in our land. We realized that we had to confront the dangers of gun violence head-on in our own community. In Sudbury and in the Commonwealth of Massachusetts, we look out for each other's health and welfare. If after each senseless act of gun violence that has splashed across the news, we ask, why can't something be done about this horror? The answer is we can, and this zoning bylaw amendment is a part of our answer. In the Commonwealth, towns and cities can control most matters of health and safety, and the zoning bylaws are one regulatory device. Sudbury is one of approximately 118 towns where marijuana sales and delivery are banned. Sudbury does not allow the operation of dry cleaning plants because chemical spills in the past have poisoned our well water. There are 8 towns where the sale of alcohol is not allowed. In Sudbury, we have banned disposable plastic shopping bags, deeming them to be an environmental hazard. In all cases, we, the legislative body, have made the decision to regulate. The wording of this article does not need to be more complicated than you see here. This has been presented in public hearings with the Planning Board and the Select Board starting last fall. The town of Acton is considering zoning regulations on firearm sales in their own town as I speak. This has become an ever more urgent matter. Most people in this hall have been touched by the horror of gun violence, including me, and it changes who we are. I will give you some statistics. The United States has more guns per capita, by far, than any other country on earth. There are almost 400 million in civilian possession. Our closest competitor is India, where there are 71 million guns, but with a population 4 times our size. Our nation is the armory for the entire planet. Or look at it this way. In the United States, there are more than 120 guns per 100 persons. And the next greatest concentration is in Yemen, with almost 53 guns per 100 citizens. The United States is second only to Brazil in total firearms deaths. We lose 50,000 people per year to gun violence. Mexico is considerably behind the United States, and then India. Numerous other countries have issued travel warnings about the United States. The United States has the second highest rate in the world of suicide by handgun, second only to Greenland. In this country, guns are the leading cause of death in children, greater than automobile accidents and greater than disease. The welfare of our children is our responsibility. We are only 120 days into the year 2023, and there have been 184 incidents of mass shootings in the United States. Massachusetts is behind the curve with only one, because we work hard to take measures to moderate the dangers here. Still, Massachusetts has more gun violence than most countries, with a firearm death rate of 3.4 per 100,000 residents. By comparison, Canada has a lower rate of 1.94 per 100,000. But Canada is a very big country, you might say. Ireland, then, has a much lower rate of 0.57 per 100,000, a fraction of the Massachusetts rate. And then South Korea has a rate of 0.08 per 100,000, a fraction of the Ireland rate. So you see, by global standards, Massachusetts is still a very dangerous place when it comes to firearms. I could go on, but let's just say we have all the guns we need and all of the opportunities to buy guns we need. If Sudbury had just one gun dealer, purchasers could come from anywhere, perhaps making straw purchases to be transferred to criminals who can't pass a background check. Sudbury does not have to participate in the arms trade. The good news is that at this time, there are no firearms dealers in Sudbury. Let's keep it that way. What we must do is put our children and families first. More guns in our community leads to more deaths. The statistics are irrefutable. Please vote yes for a safer and more secure Sudbury, and say no to the firearms trade. We can't afford to dither. Let's pass this tonight and get it in the hands of the Attorney General for her approval.
Select Board for a report.
Thank you, Madam Moderator. Select Board appreciates the citizen petition and bringing this important article before us. Earlier this evening, we had a very passionate and a very respectful discussion, which I appreciate. Ultimately, the Select Board voted 3-2 to not support Article 55. The Select Board first discussed Article 55 with the citizen petitioner on March 21st, 2023, in a public meeting. At the conclusion of that discussion, an opinion was sought from Town Council on the article and on potential modifications. The Select Board received the revised and final Town Council opinion today, and I'd suggest it may be helpful to hear from Town Council on this topic. In the opinion received, Town Council states uncertainty about whether or not the proposed bylaw as written would be approved by the Attorney General. Additionally, the opinion states that it is, quote, highly likely that the zoning bylaw would be subject to a constitutional challenge. This means that Sudbury could face an expensive and a high-profile lawsuit. The opinion further describes how certain Massachusetts municipalities, such as Brookline, Dedham, and Newton, have succeeded in regulating sales of firearms by zoning their firearms businesses within certain districts, by creating overlay districts, by imposing buffer areas around certain sensitive areas, such as schools, parks, or healthcare facilities, and or conditioning the grants of permits. Town Council's opinion also raises concerns that the lack of definitions of terms in the proposed bylaw might render it unconstitutionally vague and subject to judicial challenge. For all the reasons cited, the Select Board does not support, by a vote of 3-2, Article 55 as proposed. However, the Select Board does share the petitioner's deep concern about the high rate of gun violence in the United States and is interested in action to mitigate this crisis and increase public safety in Sudbury. Select Board members have expressed a desire to work further with the citizen petitioner and with the Planning Board to develop a revised bylaw through a modified approach, such as Brookline, Dedham, or Newton have. Tonight, Acton is considering its own bylaw, very similar to this. It's worth noting theirs is 3.5 pages, while this proposal is a paragraph and a table. Such a revised bylaw might be more likely to be approved by the Attorney General and may be more legally defensible if challenged, while still enhancing the public safety of Sudbury and beyond. Thank you.
Does the Select Board have a minority report?
We vetted this one. Didn't vet a minority report.
I'll comment as a citizen.
Okay. Mr. Riordan, Chair of the Board of Appeals, please.
Thank you, Madam Moderator. My name is John Riordan, 12 Pendleton Road. I am the Chairman of the Zoning Board of Appeals. In the narrative this evening, it's been importantly left out that Mr. Reap, who is also a member of the Zoning Board of Appeals, brought this idea, this bylaw proposal, to the Zoning Board of Appeals in August of 2022. And we had hearings in August and in September. And so the only reason that we're here today on a citizen's petition is because the Planning Board and the Select Board decided not to act before the today, when the Select Board met at 6:30 tonight on this question. The Zoning Board of Appeal, acting under its authority under Massachusetts General Laws, Chapter 40A, Section 5, voted unanimously to support this zoning amendment. It made a referral to the Planning Board with the strongest possible language recommending this proposal. I would like to, at this point, I don't know if this is the time, Madam Moderator, for me to do my individual remarks, but that is the report of the Zoning Board of Appeals.
I was just looking for the Zoning Board's report, and I'm now going to open it up to discussion. I will come back to you. Mr. Surrett, over to my left, please.
Hank Surrett, 58 Longfellow Road. This is my 45th town meeting, but the experience I bring to this article is my 50 years as a lawyer and as a legal scholar. The Supreme Court has spoken twice in the last dozen years on the issue of gun control. The first case was Heller versus District of Columbia, in which the court ruled that there is an individual right to bear arms, not limited to militia. The next case, which was 2 years ago, was New York Rifle and Pistol versus Bruin, in which the court held that the licensing standards, the licensing process, or conditioning licenses on a permit was unconstitutional. Under the current composition of the Supreme Court and the current formulation of the Second Amendment, there's a high probability that this ordinance, if adopted, would be attacked legally, and a high probability that it would be found unconstitutional. And I know Mr. Riordan, who's a friend of mine, believes that we would win the lawsuit. But one very practical effect for this hall to consider is the cost of defending a constitutional challenge brought by gun rights groups could well exceed $1 million. So if you vote yes for this bylaw, you are committing the town to having to pass at least a $1 million override next year to bear the cost of defense. There's no extra money in the budget we can go scoop to run off and defend something. The second point I will make is I am as big a foe of gun violence as you will find. If we could melt down all the guns on the planet, I'd be delighted. But this article will not accomplish one even small step toward that objective. The only meaningful way to change the gun culture in the United States is to change the Second Amendment. That is a process that emanates from the Congress. And so if you want to fight against gun violence, urge our members of Congress to seek to amend the Second Amendment. Now, the dissenting justice in Heller was Justice John Paul Stevens. It was a 5-4 decision. And the year afterwards, and shortly before he retired, he wrote an article in the Harvard Law Review in which he argued that the Second Amendment should be changed to say, while in service of the armed forces of the United States. clarifying that the right does not belong to the individual, but to the militia. There are other formulations, one of which says that Congress and the state shall have the right to regulate and preclude in whole or in part the private ownership of firearms. If either of those were adopted, the current pro-gun attitude of the Supreme Court would be circumvented, and we would have meaningful gun control in this country. I am wary of passing an article that is a useful gesture, but which will subject the town to the high risk of litigation and expensive litigation. You know, this town has had the experience of getting involved in futile litigation in the not-too-distant past. We spent more than $1 million in an unsuccessful fight with Eversource. I don't want to see us go down that path, so I urge defeat of this article.
Is the chair of the planning board present? He would like to make a comment, please, as chair of the planning board.
Thank you. Steve Garvin, 26 Bowditch Road, chair of the planning board. The planning board held a public hearing on this citizen's petition as required by Mass General Law, Chapter 48, Section 5. And as such, the planning board has reviewed and discussed the citizen's petition, which proposes to prohibit the sales, assembly, and or manufacturing of firearms and or components thereof, ammunition and explosives in all zoning districts. Based upon the exact text of the warrant article, the planning board finds the ability to administer the proposed zoning bylaw amendment, if implemented as written, being unclear and challenging for the town staff to interpret and effectively enforce. This is especially true in terms of the specific words of the proposed use category, many of which are undefined in the zoning bylaw and in the petition. As such, the planning board feels the proposed zoning bylaw amendment does not fit well into the existing language of the zoning bylaws due to its ambiguity and lack of clarity, likely to lead to unforeseen outcomes. The planning board has taken their priorities from a very deliberate two-year process of taking the town people's initiatives for the master plan. That process resulted in 154 actions, of which the board has undertaken advocating for these actions in time available at every hearing. This item was not mentioned in any of these actions and in that two-year process.
I saw a hand over to my left, please. Yes, with the hat.
Jeremy Cook, 123 Maynard Farm. The original petitioner states in the warrant that the primary impetus of this warrant was the string of Boston Globe articles which identified 80-plus firearm manufacturers or sellers in Littleton, Massachusetts. The petitioner states very clearly that the restrictions are done in the interest of public health and safety, and moreover, that the increasing access to firearms in our society is coupled with increasing death rates. By the petitioner's own logic, the rate of gun violence is related to the number and proximity of these businesses, which in the petitioner's own words, quote, exploit the darkest impulses of the human soul, end quote, for profit. The gun control advocacy group Gun Violence Archive provides a publicly available resource that tracks violence related to firearms from 2014 to 2022 nationally and locally. They track six different categories of gun violence: fatal, non-fatal, mass shootings, accidental shooting, officer-involved shooting, child-related shootings. According to their data, the towns of Littleton and Sudbury have the exact same number of firearms events across these categories, which is zero. The FBI's most recent data reports that Sudbury has 15 violent crimes in 2021, while Littleton had 5 violent crimes at that time, none of which involved firearms. So put concisely, Littleton had the highest concentration of these entities under one roof in the entire country, and Sudbury has zero. Yet Littleton had the exact same number of gun violence incidents that Sudbury had. Zero over 8 years. The proponents of the warrant may also argue that the adjacent communities took the brunt of these issues. Use the same data. Westford, Concord, Acton had the same number of fatal shootings, mass shootings, child-related shootings, and officer-related shootings during that 8-year time frame. None. Of course, our collective priority is the safety and well-being of our community. However, the idea that the zoning restriction makes a difference in public health and safety is deeply flawed. If the largest collection of these entities under one roof in the entire United States, the capital guns in the world, fails to result in an increase of violence or injuries in a town very similar to our own, then how can we make that fact-based conclusion that this zoning change will have any impact more than opening us up to legal challenges and put the burden of on our police department to regulate and enforce this warrant?
I would ask town council to give his comments as well, please.
Lee Smith, KP Law, town council. Select Board Chair Russo accurately summarized the opinion that was provided. I'll note that our KP Law opinion is available and posted on the town website for your review. At the risk of sounding repetitive, I would like to just summarize that opinion in my own words. The proposed zoning bylaw proposes to make the sales, assembly, and or manufacturing of firearms and or components thereof, ammunition, and explosives a prohibited use in all zoning districts in the town of Sudbury. I will note that, as far as I'm aware, there are no other municipalities in the Commonwealth and perhaps in the entire country that have imposed such a total ban. If this hall passes this motion, the zoning bylaw will be reviewed by the Massachusetts Attorney General. That standard for review is whether the bylaw is inconsistent with state law, federal law, or the Constitution. In addition, as some folks have already mentioned, the Attorney General may take note of the lack of definitions included in this draft bylaw, and it could be deemed void for vagueness. If the Attorney General does not reject this bylaw, there's a strong likelihood that it will be challenged in court. If civil rights violations are alleged and proven, the town may be liable for attorney's fees for the other side. In 2022, the Supreme Court issued a precedent-setting case by the name of Bruen. It's spelled B-R-U-E-N. That was a handgun licensing case. So that's the new standard that the Supreme Court established, was that any regulation of firearms would need to be shown to be consistent with the nation's historic tradition of firearm regulation. That new standard has yet to be applied to cases such as this in the zoning bylaw regulatory process, so it's unknown if and how it would be applied to this bylaw. However, that's the state that we're left in. I'll note that there are a number of other communities in the Commonwealth, including Brookline, Dedham, Newton, Plainville, and tonight Acton is taking it up, who have restricted through zoning bylaws firearm sales and other uses, but not in all districts. None of them have a total ban, and that's the difference. Thank you.
I'm going to go over to my left on the side, and then I'm going to come this way. Yep, the gentleman right there. Thank you.
My name is John Byrne. I live on 53 Basswood Ave in Sudbury. I've lived there for nearly 25 years. I am a hunter. I belong to the Maynard Rod and Gun Club. I also belong to the GOAL, which is a Gun Owners Action League. It's a local gun advocacy group out of North Rural Mass. This is not a town issue, especially where this is written. This is a state issue. We have some of the strictest gun laws in the country. We have Governor Healey and we have Attorney General Campbell, who are probably the most anti-gun governor and attorney general in the country. And they would not touch this proposed regulation. It's absolutely unconstitutional. It would cost, we just heard a great story of how much it would cost the town. Well, what people don't realize is people like myself, legal gun owners who hunt, we feel that we are the enemy, that people almost are against us. This has nothing to do with gun violence in Brazil or Korea or Ireland. This is against gun rights for legal gun owners like myself that just want to be hunt and left alone. I can assure you that if this were brought up, that the Gun Owners Action League would absolutely take action on this. And it would be a rallying cry for all legal gun owners and hunters like myself to come right towards Sudbury. I don't want that. I don't want my town to be drained of useless money. We could be using it for better things like we've gone over today. Thank you.
Okay. Ms. Drettler?
Hi, I'm Janie Drettler, Vice Chair of the Select Board. So tonight you decide what happens on this article. This is in your hands, and I fully respect everybody's views here in town meeting. I have the deepest respect for my fellow members on the Select Board. You know, we will have differences of opinions, and that's fine. I think that's what helps us grow as a community, become a better community. And I'm very heartened to know that the Select Board tonight committed to bringing forward an article if this one does not pass tonight. And we're also committed to working to improve an article. But I think what was striking to me with town meeting last night and tonight, and I just wanted to share with you some information, Sudbury values the health, wellness, and safety of every resident in this community. We spend a lot of money to support the health, wellness, and safety of our community. Between last night and tonight, 13 articles, we spent over $3 million on the health, well, safety, and wellness of our residents. We spent over $500,000 on surveillance cameras in our schools last night. Surveillance cameras. And part of the reason that was brought up last night to support the acquisition of these surveillance cameras was to protect our children from active shooting events. So that really hit home with me. I value the rights of individuals. I absolutely do. But I think that, you know, we need to remind ourselves how we're spending our money and what our values are. And to me personally, I don't want to see another gun mass shooting, and we will, sadly, but I do not want to see that article say, the guns came from Sudbury. That strikes in my heart, but again, this is your decision tonight. It's up to you, and we'll honor that. But the Select Board is committed, this Select Board is committed to bringing forward an article if this one fails. So I thank you very much for your time. I appreciate it.
Mr. Reardon, and then I'm going to move into the audience.
Thank you, Madam Moderator. Just a few comments. There's a lot of really erroneous and false information being bandied about in the hall this evening. This amendment to our zoning bylaw absolutely does not take away anyone's right to keep and bear arms. Even under the U.S. Supreme Court's decision in McDonald, in Bruin, there is an admission in the language of the opinions that the use of firearms is not, and the regulation of firearms is not absolute. There is no absolute right under the Second Amendment to do whatever you want with a gun. There were limitations that, I'll just give you a list of typical limitations that are probably constitutional under the Supreme Court decisions. And I would just, for your record, I am an attorney. I've been an attorney for 47 years. I'm still junior to my friend Hank Surratt. But I spent the early part of my career as a legislative attorney for the U.S. Congress, and I worked on legislation that had to pass constitutional muster. So I think I come from a background where I know what I'm talking about. But under the McDonald versus City of Chicago case, and also the New York State Rifle and Pistol Association versus Bruin, Here are some examples of what would be permissible state and local limitations on commercial sales of firearms. We're not talking about whether you have a right to have a gun. We're not talking about whether you have a right to have an open carry. This isn't about whether you can go hunting or shoot your gun at the Maynard Rod and Gun Club. That's not what this is about. They'll want to talk about it otherwise, but that's not what this is about. Here are some examples. Background checks. Requiring background checks for all firearm purchases. Waiting periods. Requiring a waiting period before a firearm can be purchased. Age limits. Setting an age limit for firearm purchases, such as 21 years old. Registration. Requiring firearms to be registered with state and local government can be a permissible limitation. Requiring that licensing and training, which could include insurance requirements with respect to the purchasing of a firearm, can be a permissible limitation. Limits on high-capacity magazines, banning high-capacity magazines, can be a permissible limitation. Bans on assault weapons, banning assault weapons, can be, and certain types of firearms, can be a permissible limitation. Prohibitions on possession by certain individuals, individuals, for example, who have been convicted of certain crimes, who are under certain restraining orders, who have been diagnosed with certain mental health conditions. Adding zoning limitations is not a giant leap from those permissible limitations. I take strong issue with the, well, maybe we might face a lawsuit. Yeah, maybe we will. But somebody has to put a stake in the ground and stand up and end this torrent of gun violence in America. And we have, I've seen other data that my friend Mr. Reap has given it to you, but my data shows it's about our population in 2021 was 332 million people, and that we had 450 million guns with that population. The gun manufacturers are producing between 9 and 10 million guns a year, and we will probably have, by the end of this year, almost, that data was from 2017, by the way, and that, with the rate of gun manufacturing in the United States, and I backed out the export numbers, we will probably be approaching 500 million guns in the United States. This amendment is all about whether you're going to have a gun store in your town. It's not about whether you can own a gun. It's not about whether you can open carry. It's not about, you know, regulations of what you can do with your gun. It's about the issue of whether this community, using its zoning limitation, wants to have a peaceful and tranquil community without the threat of guns. And, oh.
You have 1 minute. I've been keeping track.
Just a couple of, yeah, thanks for the help. I would just point out that there are 326 gun stores in Massachusetts. The vast majority of them are inside 495. And the town that has the most gun stores in Massachusetts is right next door in Framingham. They have 11 gun stores. And all you want to do, if you want to drive, there's two of them right downtown in center of Marlboro, right near their city hall. There's gun stores in Natick. There are gun stores all over eastern Massachusetts.
And that is time, sir. Thank you. I believe there was somebody straight in front of me. Yep, a gentleman in the blue, please.
Jeff Phillips, 125 Hudson Road. So I am one of the reviled members of the gun community. I grew up as an Army brat. I spent a career in the Air Force, and that's just kind of what my background is. So I came to here, to the town meeting tonight, with a couple of questions, and I'm glad both of them have been addressed. Is this constitutional or not? I don't know, but I'm sure somebody would take it to court to figure out. Second was, how would we figure out enforcement of commercial versus not commercial, all the zoning rules under, given how vague this is? I don't know. But somebody would certainly take it to court to find out. And then the other question was, how much money is in the budget to fight the lawsuit if it's going to come? I don't know, but I don't think there's a lot sitting there given everything else we voted for. So I will tell you, as a member of GOAL,
And I will tell you, as a member of the various other gun organizations that support the Second Amendment right, not the 27th Amendment, not the 14th Amendment, but the Second Amendment, which predated the ratification of the Constitution, and that we march every year to Lexington and Concord to commemorate the fact that people in this town had guns to protect us and our way of life as we founded the country, I will tell you that there will be a lawsuit for this. You may not like the Second Amendment. You may not like what happens. If you want to change it, there's a process to do that, and we need to do that. But I will guarantee you that the gun community is looking for legal law cases they think they can win, just like every other advocacy group looks for law cases they think they can win. And if you put this out there, somebody's going to show up, and we're going to be paying for the lawsuit. And once again, this is the town's decision. You can vote however you want. But I would agree with the comment that was made earlier. If you vote for this, you better make sure there's some money in the 2025 budget to pay for a lawsuit, because it's coming down the pike.
I'm going to ask that everybody who's standing, please come and sit down. You need to make sure you're finding a seat. And I'm going to bring this to a vote now. We've been debating this for almost 40 minutes. The quantum of vote required for passage of Article 55 is 2/3. Voting on Article 55 is now open. Few more seconds on voting. Voting is now closed. Article 55 does not pass by 2/3 majority. Before no clapping, before we leave, a final reminder to please return your voting keypad to the election workers. At this time, do I have a motion to dissolve this 2023 annual town meeting? Is there a second? All in favor? Thank you very much, everyone.